Good morning. Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. My name is Nell Newton. I'll be your lay leader this morning. Welcome to our church. If you have been here many times, if this is your first time, welcome. We wish to be an inclusive congregation. And I could read off a whole list of things that we are tolerant of, but instead I will say we are simply going to welcome you and your family and your brother and your neighbor.
We gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice.
This morning's reading is a poem by Jane Kenyon. I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birchwood. All morning I did the work I love. At noon I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the walls, and planned another day, just like this day. But one day, I know, it will be otherwise.
I know, speaking of Thanksgiving, at least three reasons for you to be wildly thankful as a congregation this morning. The first is that there are 22 Unitarian Universalist ministers who are clamoring to be your next settled minister. 22. It may rise. There's probably more. They're probably beating them away from the door of entry to be able even to be in that place of talking with the congregation. Secondly, I just spent a day and an evening with the marvelous board of the church, and they have made great leaps forward in creating policy governance, which will create a wonderful structure for this congregation as it moves forward and tries to fulfill its mission. A wonderful, wonderful thing. And third is that, counting bridge pledges, this congregation brought in about $110,000 more this year than last year. Please give yourself a hand. Bill, could you stand? Bill Edwards, our masterful. But it doesn't stop there, because when I got set down in my seat this morning, I looked down and said the flowers are donated this morning by Eric Stimmel and Bess Green in honor of their 22nd anniversary. Let's give these people a hand. Wow. I'm impressed. Okay. Over the years, I have become increasingly impressed with the importance of Thanksgiving as a religious holiday. For I have, through my years, developed a deeper and deeper appreciation of faith and spirituality that includes, at the center, appreciation, gratitude, thanksgiving, and perhaps a reverence for all of life. And if we speak in this congregation of a mission of nourishing souls and transforming lives, surely, in my opinion, central to that process is our ability to be thankful, appreciative, and grateful in large and small ways as we make our way through the intimate details of our daily lives. Our eldest daughter, Allie, taught me an important lesson in appreciation and gratitude about 7 years ago. Not long after she first learned to walk, I would sometimes take her to my office that was north of Seattle, Washington. And I would escort her out of the car. I would hold her little hand, and we would walk toward my office, which would involve going down a small hill and reaching the office door. We would not get very far until we came upon a little pool of water, because you see, in and around Seattle and the Puget Sound, there is water all the time, everywhere. And she would stop and look at that pool of water. And she would gaze at it, just stop and gaze at that water. Maybe 3 feet by 4 feet, little pond, clear water, just gathered up on the asphalt, nothing exciting. She would sometimes kick the water gently with her foot, sometimes roughly kick it, sometimes kick a rock that was in the little pool of water, watch the ripples run across the surface. And she would do this just about every time I took her to church. And every time she did it, I would wonder, why? It's just water. There's water everywhere. Why is she staring at the water? And I would look toward my office. And I would think about all the things I had to do, needed to do, should do, could do, would like to do. And I would become doubly impatient. One day I rerouted the way we walked from my car to my office. I went a way in which we would not encounter so many pools of water. It involved going down another part of the slope through a grassy area next to a tree and by two huge boulders that lay half buried in the ground 8 feet from my office door. But she found new points of attraction and fascination. She especially liked those two big rocks, gray with black speckles, and the moss that was growing on them. And she went through the same phase of fascination as I went through my cycles of impatience. Slowly it dawned on me that maybe she knew something I didn't know, or knew something that I had forgotten, or lost contact with something I had once felt or known. Where did the wonder go? The appreciation, even reverence, for the little everyday mundane things? Maybe there is too little wonder in this world, I began to think. Too little appreciation of the small, intimate details of life. Perhaps there is too little thankfulness in this world. In July of 1999, my wife and I traveled from Florida to Washington State, saw the country. Midway through this trip, we were passing through the state of Missouri, I made a stop at a filling station. It was oppressively hot. The sky was cloudy. The wind was still. The land was flat. The filling station I stopped at was one of three or four buildings huddled around the four corners of a freeway exit. As I got out of the car and began to fill the tank with gas, I heard some voices off to my left. They sounded like they were quarreling voices. I intentionally ignored them, finished pumping the gas, and walked inside to pay the bill for the gas. And as I turned, I noticed that a man and a woman came from my left, and one of them looked angry, the woman especially, but the man too, and he followed her as she rather rapidly walked off to my right. I ignored them, and I went inside. When I came back out, my wife said, "Ed, someone is attacking a woman over there." And she pointed toward where they were. I looked and I didn't see them. A grassy knoll blocked my vision. But then soon I saw them come over the hill, and I saw the woman almost running and the man not far behind her. And Alfie said, "I saw him throw her to the ground." I went back into the gas station. I said, "Call 911. I turned around, and then I began to walk toward the couple, which now were only 50 feet or so toward me. And as I got toward them, I began to think of what I might say. And by the time I got to them, I said, "Hello, my name is Ed. I'm a minister, and it looked like you might be having a quarrel. Can I be of help?" For a moment, I thought this might be a combative situation, but the man turned his head downward, and I knew there were no problems. The man began to speak quickly and eagerly. My conversation with this couple lasted the next 20 minutes. The problem, as they defined it, was that he wanted her to go with him to Chicago in his truck, and she did not want to go. That started the argument. And as their argument continued, I noticed that the one most powerful force present in their talking, in their being with each other, is that they both believe with a deep conviction that there was something wrong with the other person. Indeed, there were many things wrong with the other person, and they were zealous in their efforts to fix that which was wrong in the other person. And there was this feeling that if they could just eliminate all those bad things that were wrong with the other person, life would be at peace. It was hard for me to speak because of the intensity and the passion of their efforts to point out and to correct each other's faults. My conversation, if I might call it that, lasted until a police officer showed up and began his conversation with them. And I thought, and I said out loud to Alfie's as we drove away, "This is what hell is. This land without a single trace of appreciation of the other, of life, of oneself. There is no way to get to a satisfying place in life from this place of no appreciation. I have come to see this couple's approach to life and their way of being as symbolic of a whole range of problems that boils down to this, the absence of appreciation. And such persons as that couple, lest we be quick in our judgmentalness, are no different from the rest of us, but only in the degree to which their lack of appreciation is chronic, extreme, and inflexible. One way appreciation and gratitude is undermined in so many of us is by the comparing mind. We are continually tempted to compare ourselves with possessions and accomplishments and achievements of others, and to resent what others have done, what they possess and can do, but that we cannot. There's an old story about a stonemason that reflects this dilemma. Once upon a time, there was a stonemason who hated his job, hated his work, and hated his life because of that. And hated, really, the people in his life because he had so much bitterness. He wished with all of his heart that he could be rich and could loaf all day long and be responsible to no one. One day, he heard a voice that said, "You are what you want to be." And so he imagined himself as wealthy, and automatically he became rich, and he was happy, supremely happy. For a while, until one day he passed by a king, and this man thought, "I want to be powerful like that king, so that my word is as law throughout all the land." And he instantly became a king. What power he had, and everyone obeyed him, and he was happy for a while. And then he saw the sun in the sky, and he observed, "The sun is more powerful than I. It gives life to all living things. I want to be the ultimate in power, the sun." And so he became the sun, and he was happy until he realized in his observations of the clouds below him that they were so free and flexible and traveled here and yon. And then he wished to become a cloud. And soon the cloud condensed into raindrops, and he observed that, and it struck a rock of granite. And the rock, he noticed, had been there for centuries, firm and solid and rooted in nurturing earth. And so he became, through his wish, a rock. And now he believed that he had obtained wholeness and completeness and satisfaction that would last through all eternity. The sun warmed him, the rain refreshed him, Mother Earth held him. And then one day, he saw a man approaching him. And in this man's hand was a large hammer. It was a stonemason who began striking the hammer against the rock. "How I wish I could be that stonemason who is conqueror of this great rock." And he once again became a stonemason. And after some time, he realized there was nothing better than to be who he actually was. And he felt gratitude for being exactly what he was amid all the challenges of what his life was. And at last, he was free. Appreciation, thankfulness, and gratitude as a spiritual practice can be a highly practical way of living. I recently attended a pre-congregational meeting at this church, last Sunday, in fact. You might be shocked to hear that a variety of opinions were shared about the church budget. Some of the opinions shared differed from others and from what I personally, in my heart of hearts, held to be true. Now, when people share opinions about subjects that are different than our own, it is possible to view what we hear with utter judgment. Have you ever occupied yourselves with thinking of how you are going to refute everything a person is saying while they are still saying it? I'm sure you haven't, but I have. But there is another way to relate to people whose opinions differ from our own. If we regard the remarks of other people through the lens of appreciation, understanding, and thankfulness, we can hear their words as a gift, as something that can possibly expand our thinking. And as I attempted last Sunday to rest in a posture of appreciation for every single thing that was said, I found myself towards the end of the meeting thinking and feeling and believing I am listening to the collective intelligence of the congregation. I'm listening to all the parts of some magnificent whole that any of us can receive if our posture towards all persons is one of appreciation. Do you see the power of appreciation and gratitude? On December the 12th, this congregation will hold a congregational meeting about its financial commitments to the future. Part of what may be debated is about the use of savings money to fully fund a volunteer coordinator. On one side of the debate may be persons who say to spend savings to fund a volunteer coordinator is wasteful, imprudent, unwise, irresponsible, ill-conceived, and quite possibly wicked. There will always be good causes, this group will say, always good causes, and if you spend your money on this now, then next year it will be some other good cause until the point will be reached when we will be asking our senior minister to spend his or her days walking up and down Burnett Road in the morning and up and down Lamar Avenue in the afternoon with a tin cup begging for money. And the other side might say, I didn't come to church to be fearful. If I wanted to do that, I would stay home and watch the news. This is not the church of Our Lady of perpetual savings and hoarding. We need to use money that is ours to live our mission of transforming lives and nourishing souls. That is a wise investment of these savings of ours. And so the debate might go back and forth. But if the debate, the dialogue, can be lived in an atmosphere of mutual appreciation, how different that would be if it were not lived in an atmosphere of mutual appreciation. Gratitude, appreciation, and thankfulness are meant to be practiced. We might set aside some time each day to express thanks in writing or in speaking to those closest to us or to nobody but the universe, saying what we are appreciative for. We might encourage family members to take turns saying what they are grateful for each day. We can practice turning something challenging into a statement of appreciation, into a posture of appreciation, as in, I thank you, my children, who never return my phone calls, for reminding me of the amazing gift of patience. We might take everyday simple experiences as reason to pause, to be thankful, as in, I thank you, O farmers I do not know, for the food I am privileged to put on my plate every day. Or we may take a mystical turn, as in saying, I thank you, life, for this amazing gift of being alive. I'm going to ask you today, each of you, to practice
the experience of gratitude. After church today, while you're sipping your coffee, I'd like for you to find just one person you know well or not so well, just one person, and to go to them and to say just one thing that you are thankful for that person being or doing, either something recently or something far back in the past. In closing, let me share this. Gratitude connects us to life, to one another, to ourselves, to the earth, to all living things. Remember the Buddha's remark when he said, "No mother, nor father, nor any other kin can do greater good for oneself than a mind directed well." If we are without gratitude, friends, health, home, food, work, music, art, nature, and all the gifts of life become mere background noise, props on the stage of the ego's preening, whose absence we lament, but whose presence means little as we ask for more and more and more. But if we walk in gratitude, the world really is a feast, a treasure, a prize, a gift. May we practice gratitude. May we give thanks for each day, each moment of our wonder-filled lives. May this be so. And please don't forget to express to at least one person your thanks after the service. I share with you this benediction. May the peace of still deep waters, the strength of our Mother, the Earth, and a compassion so deep that it reaches towards all persons, leaving no one out, be in us and among us until we gather again in this sacred home of hope.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.